I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Into another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer,
Frank Cockery,
and thanks as always for listening on WGR550.com, where, you know, we don't trade promising young centers.
Well, yeah.
Mark.
Wow.
Bergevin.
I mean,
Mark Bergevin.
All right. So,
first off, I hate you for being the derp of a GM that you are. Just this one time, I hate you. For those that don't know, live under a rock or willfully ignorant, Mark Bergevin traded Alex Galchenyuk to the Arizona Coyotes. In return, they got Max Domi, the young winger, 1-for-1. The 24-year-old Galchenyuk going to Arizona, the 23-year-old Domi coming back into Montreal. I hate you, Mark Bergevin, because... how many times on this podcast have I said something about the fact that I would love to have Alex Galchenyuk on this team if we were to trade Ryan O'Reilly?
Yeah. Yeah.
So damn you for getting derped by another GM first. Not that Max Domi is bad. He's a promising young player. But he is 1 year younger than Alex Galchenyuk, far less established in this league. Oh, and you guys just traded the last center you had on the Abs. For a guy who is probably just another winger.
To be fair, he's a good winger, but he struggled. Domi struggled over the last
couple
years.
He had four goals last season that involved a goaltender.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's still a lot of promise with him.
Yes.
Because he's got a lot of skill. He showed that in his rookie year. He was a 20-goal scorer. He had like 55 points in his rookie year.
I know, but you know who else did that?
I know Galchenyuk did. I think Galchenyuk is a better player.
This is one of those trades where just like you got to look at the GM there and go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And first off, as the fan of a division rival, I will love the entirety of Mark Bergevin continuing to have a job.
Yeah.
In Montreal.
Yeah.
Continue to waste Carey Price's career. And taking one less team out of a playoff race more years than not now because of the fact that your game plan looks literally like it just looks like it says Carey Price written on a post-it note.
Yeah. So Arizona gets Galchenyuk and... depending on what they do with Clayton Keller, I think they're going to use him as a winger more than I don't think he's a center to them.
Okay. That would help Keller's game get a little more simplified.
Yeah, and he had a really good rookie year.
And by the way, Alex Galchenyuk can play center.
Yeah, which I think they're going to use him as a center. I think that's what they made it sound like.
In their post-trade presser, he said something to the fact of that he's going to be a center. There are not many times that you see a young center like that available for trade.
Yep, which is true. Keller, by the way, 65 points in his rookie year.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
That means he's going to get better.
And
with a guy like Galchenyuk,
the two of them
could just roll hand in hand.
Right now... you got their top two centers being Derek Stepan and Alex Galchenyuk.
Yeah, Galchenyuk doesn't even have to step into the one. Or nope. He could, and then you've got Derek Stepan at the two.
Right now, their center core at least looks like Derek Stepan, Alex Galchenyuk, and probably Christian Dvorak as your third. And that could give Dvorak a lot more time to develop. Yeah, and he's got a lot of NHL action already.
You don't need Dvorak to go ahead.
But he doesn't need to step in. He had a promise in rookie year, too, I think. He had 37 points.
Yeah.
Well, 37 points last season, 33 points the year before.
So you don't have to have him be
after
forced.
Having 121 in his last year in juniors.
Yeah, but like you don't need Dvorak to go ahead and stress over the fact that, you know.
That's what having centers can do.
Yes.
It's funny how that happens. By the way.
So, yeah, no. First, it just Arizona looks like bandits here, in my opinion. And again, I know that Max Domi is a talented, promising young player. But again, you got a guy who's only 1 year older, has far more credibility and production in this league already, and can play center for you.
Who's got 2 years left on his contract, whereas you would have had to sign Domi this year. Well,
they signed Domi to
a
two-year
deal. And Montreal signed Domi to a bridge contract.
2 years left on his deal now, too. Alex Galchenyuk is a player that was miscast.
Yes.
In Montreal.
Yes. He was misused.
Now going to a team with a fresh start.
And a team.
Far less pressure on him.
Yes. Might revitalize his career. It might even make him the player that everyone thought he was going to be.
Actually, all he has to do is go back to his career shooting average.
That's true.
And that revitalizes his career.
Yeah.
Last year was a down year for him, but he shot 8%.
Now he doesn't have to do it in Montreal.
Yeah. But again, he shot 8%. That's just a down year.
His career just got a jump start by leaving Montreal.
Yes, I agree with that. But again... The man had a down year last year because he was shooting at 8%.
Yeah.
He wasn't a bandit on the power play. He was a contributor, but he still did a lot even strength. We went over a lot on Alex Galchenyuk on the last podcast, as a matter of fact.
So, okay.
You trade him one for one for a guy who scored 4 goals against a goaltender last year. He had 5 empty netters.
Yeah.
That's how you make out like a bandit. You got a center. You got a center, John Chyka. Congratulations. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I'm still of the belief that they are going to trade Ryan O'Reilly. I don't necessarily know if I would want them to, but I am
into the belief
that it's going to happen.
So go into that. After the trade Thursday night.
Take Montreal off my list.
Pierre LeBrun tweeted out, for what it's worth, if indeed Montreal decides to push on Ryan O'Reilly, Galchenyuk gone doesn't do anything from a Buffalo point of view. That's what LeBrun says. It means that if the Sabres were trading Ryan O'Reilly to Montreal, Galchenyuk wasn't who they wanted.
But what is
Sabres will be looking for a different mix of assets, i.e. that tells me they weren't looking at to get Galchenyuk. They were looking to get prospects and picks. Young players and picks, which remember, Montreal has 4 second round picks. And I think that to me, that kind of says they want one of their young defensemen, either Victor Mete or Noah Juulsen. I would go Juulsen, and they want Ryan Poehling. And probably at least 1 second round pick, maybe even another pick as well. That doesn't have to be a second.
Right.
It could be like a fourth.
Yeah.
That to me is what that tweet says. I tweeted out, don't trade Ryan O'Reilly. How about just don't trade Ryan O'Reilly? But this morning, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it again. I was looking at some stats from the season, and I looked at Colorado, what they did this year. They had a center core going into the season of Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene, and rookie Alex Kerfoot, who they signed in the offseason, who was a college free agent.
Right.
And there was all the rumors about Duchene wanting out, and they were going to trade Duchene and whatever. And that eventually happened. And Joe Sakic got what he wanted in the trade. He got it's in the 3-team trade with them, Ottawa, and Nashville getting Turris. And Joe Sakic got a haul. And then look at what happened with Colorado. MacKinnon was a Hart Trophy candidate, and they made the playoffs. Alex Kerfoot primarily was their second line center that year, and he looked really good. He looked really good. Something tells me you might see Buffalo go down that route, where even though they trade Ryan O'Reilly, they might feel comfortable putting Casey Mittelstadt right behind Eichel in the depth charts. And you might see that kind of turnaround. I'm not guaranteeing that kind of turnaround. You might see it, especially with Dahlin coming in. But maybe that's the route they're going towards.
So because they need in-season trade.
Because maybe they need this kind of shakeup.
Not even necessarily shakeup. Maybe they just want to see if Casey Mittelstadt can handle the second center.
If they are openly looking at if they are willing to trade Ryan O'Reilly, then they are comfortable with Middlestat being your at least at the two second line center. Even if they get a guy back, if they were never interested in trading Ryan O'Reilly from the beginning, that would tell me that they didn't want Middlestat being that guy right away. But if they are open to it, that tells me that they think that Middlestat can do it.
Right.
If they weren't comfortable with it, they wouldn't be trading O'Reilly.
Right. And we'll see what the definitive answer is then.
Yeah.
But at this point, you got to think, for me, and this is just me talking out of my butt at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If a deal's getting done with Montreal at this point for me with Ryan O'Reilly, number three better be in my discussions. Because otherwise, I'm not talking to you. Because if Jason Botterill wants to make this team better now, he's going to need that. He's going to need something to make him better now. Because what you'd be doing trading Ryan O'Reilly, again, is you're taking another player out of your top six. Good Lord, they need to add to that still, even without trading Ryan O'Reilly. Number three better be in my discussions. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to happen, but it needs to be in the talks.
I would imagine it's in the talks. I don't think Ryan O'Reilly alone gets you the third pick. I think Ryan O'Reilly, if Montreal was in somewhere between 7 and 10, I think Ryan O'Reilly straight up would get you at high probably 7 by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But 3...
You got to offer something else in
you
there.
You're going to have to give up something else to do it.
Right.
Which I don't see. So that's why I was also saying at least one of Montreal's second round picks, one of their fourth round picks, which they have three of, and I would take a guess and say Noah Juulsen or Victor Mete, whichever one, and probably Ryan Poehling.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my guess is what the value for Ryan O'Reilly would be. Because remember, we also were talking about how he was looking for a Mike Richards kind of deal.
I don't know if Montreal can give me that anymore.
That probably is the closest to a Mike Richards kind of deal you're going to get.
Galchenyuk made it more convincing for me.
Galchenyuk would make it more convincing, yes. But remember, let's say you get Noah Juulsen or Victor Mete. One of them is a left shot defenseman, one of them is a right shot defenseman. So it's probably like, which one do you want more? A right shot or left shot? One is 20 years old in Mete, one is 21 in Juulsen. A lot of room to grow. Multiple draft picks. Hey, you need as many draft picks as you can. And Ryan Poehling is a 19-year-old center who is currently playing in college. And you see how much this management is relying on drafting guys who are mostly in Europe and in college.
Right.
Ryan Poehling would add to that. And he was also a former first-round pick.
Right, right.
Huh. Whose rights you would have for another, if should you not sign him, for at least another 2 years. But I think Ryan Poehling's a guy who's going to sign, who might even sign his entry level after this next college season, because he's pretty good.
Yeah, but Alex Galchenyuk, my trade talks about you will be missed.
Yeah, I would have loved to have him, but Montreal got an offer for Domi, and they were like, sure.
Yeah,
that's
for some reason.
Yeah,
they said sure.
Yeah,
because they've now traded the likes of PK Subban, Mikhail Sergachev, and Alex Galchenyuk for a return of Shea Weber and his gigantic contract.
His albatross, yes. Max Domi
and Jonathan Drouin, who they threw at center very irresponsibly.
Yeah.
What do they have down the middle anymore in Montreal?
Nothing.
What do they have down the middle? Maybe Drouin throwing him in there again?
Ryan Poehling.
He's not signed yet.
Exactly. But that's who they got.
Montreal, you're just...
Their number one center, if they don't make any moves right now, their number one center going into next season, it's definitely not going to be Drouin.
It might
be. It's probably Charles Hudon.
Dude, What choice do they have right now?
It's probably
Andrew Shaw?
Philip Danault.
Like, they don't have any other options.
They must.
Drew Ann has, like, he's going to be forced into playing center again.
They must be banking on getting Tavares.
And when they don't,
it's going to be hilarious. They don't get Tavares.
If Tavares stays in New York the way Stamkos did, last minute kind of thing.
Oh, my God.
Montreal, like, you might need to fire Bergevin there.
Like, he should have been fired 3 years ago.
He should have been fired forever ago, I agree. But at one point, do you just continue to let it slide?
I mean, Gard Snow finally got fired.
Yeah. So, yes, the right thing does happen, sometimes extremely delayed, and Montreal is probably waiting there going, why not us? Where
yeah.
is it?
Yeah. And then the third pick that they have, the third overall pick, and they're not even going to get a franchise center with that pick because there are none in this draft.
There are not. There's some pretty good wingers.
There's a lot of good wingers.
There's not much on the centers.
No.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So Montreal's in a tough spot.
Montreal's in a really tough spot.
I was on Cap Friendly this week, and I did a little armchair GM.
I did see that.
You saw? Yeah. So what did you think of it? So what I did was I didn't...
You didn't do any trades.
Yeah, I didn't. Well...
Which I don't necessarily condemn you for.
Because I'm also not going to predict trades. I'm trying to think, like, what's the most probable that they are going to do. And when I was thinking this a few days ago, I was thinking, I don't know if they're going to trade Ryan O'Reilly. I'll just say they're not going to do it and keep him at the second line.
But
with Casey Mills as three.
There's one thing, though, that does need to happen.
What's that?
They do need to shuffle the defensive corps because there's suddenly a surplus.
Yeah. That's why...
some player on the Buffalo defensive corps is getting jettisoned.
I think it's Beaulieu.
I'm suspecting Jake McCabe. Mostly because of the return you can get.
I think so, but I would suspect that they want to see how he is with this group first. If he doesn't gel,
Bogosian
then
might
you
be,
might see him.
Bogosian might be a
you know versus guy. Yeah,
to
versus
trade.
Like I would like. Okay, so what I did, my armchair GM. Obviously, you got Rasmus Dahlin. I re-signed. You know the RFAs that had to be re-signed: Justin Bailey, Nick Baptiste, Sean Malone, Daniel Regan, C.J. Smith, Scott Wilson, Sam Reinhart.
Hang on.
UFAs. I signed. I signed one big one, which is I think we were talking about it. David Perron, I think he's a guy who would be a value signing. You don't have to give him a long-term contract.
That's a little tricky.
How
Perron?
You need
might
a winger.
Command more money on the big, on the open market because such a good pace.
I gave 4 years, four and a half per year.
He might command
he
more.
He might
than that.
Get more. I don't think he gets more than 5.5 though. And even if it's 5.5, I'll give him 4. I don't think he gets more than 4 years. Maybe 5.
Right. You mentioned something.
Because he's 30 years old.
Yeah. You mentioned something, by the way, that kind of reminded me of something.
What?
The Sabres trading Hudson Fashing this week.
Yes.
And it made you had said Justin Bailey and Nick Baptiste. I have a question for you.
What's that?
Would you be shocked if one of those two or both of them didn't get tendered or re-signed?
I would imagine both of them get tendered. Now, will both of them to be signed is a different story. I would imagine you would tender both of them when you're able to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you do end up deciding to move one of them, you know,
yeah, you can move their rights.
Yes.
Kind of like what they did with Fashing. Again,
but trading Fashing now also told me that they weren't planning on qualifying him. They would have if they didn't get anything back for him, they would have just let him walk.
I think Bottrell did say something along the lines to our own Paul Hamilton saying that they were going to plan on tendering him as well. It was just they got a trade offer for him that
yeah,
they took.
Okay. That makes sense then too.
Brandon Hickey, the defenseman.
And Hickey's a good prospect.
Pretty decent prospect defensively.
It doesn't seem to be as hyped as when he was first drafted, but there's something there.
There's something there, I think.
I think there
maybe
is.
Maybe you get a Casey Nelson out of it, which is not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal.
And especially with what happened to Fasching at the end of this past season in Rochester in the playoffs, where he was healthy scratch for their final two games.
He needed a fresh start, too.
He needed a fresh start, but I think Buffalo needed to move on from that trade.
That's true. So I would imagine at least both of them get tendered so that you keep the rights after July 1st. And then do you sign both of them? We'll see. I wouldn't be shocked if you signed both of them because you need that depth.
Yeah,
you still need that depth in Buffalo and in Rochester. And you got, because you got a lot of guys coming up, they're going to need some help as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with a guy like Pominville, who's got 1 year left on his contract, you would probably want to have something there as his replacement. And you've got two guys who could be your future third and fourth line winger spots. Right there. And you don't have to do anything to add to it. You got things there right now. You know, induce as much competition as you can so you can get the best out of them throughout the year. I also added JT Brown as, once again, another depth option. I don't know if they're going to sign a guy for the NHL roster as depth. If they do make some signings, it's probably for Rochester again.
Mm-hmm.
I added David Perron because I think they got to add at least one winger who could play top six.
Yes.
So David Perron to me seems like the best value option for that position. I don't know if he gets 4 years, 4.5. He might get 5 years, 5.5. I don't see him getting more than 5.5 though, because he's also 30 years old, and I don't see teams giving him more than 5 years. But he also had 75 points last year. He had a great year in Vegas. He also has to hit free agency. He might still re-sign with Vegas. But let's just say he goes to free agency because him and the Knights can't come to a contract.
Right.
He would be a guy I think the Sabres would target.
Right. And it makes enough sense.
And I put, as the roster, Perron's on the first line with Eichel and Reinhart.
Makes enough sense.
Ryan O'Reilly, second line with Kyle Poso and Evan Rodriguez. Just a plug. You got to put somebody there. Rodriguez is a guy who would bring speed to that line. It doesn't matter whether he's a top six forward or not. It's just a matter of, does he help that line?
You know, it keeps making me think of something. The lack of players on the left wing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is it time to finally start questioning Alex Nylander? I'm still backing off, but I'm starting to think that even for me, a guy who's been patient with him, the time is coming where I need to see him in a Sabres uniform on the regular.
It's gotta happen.
It's gotta
this
be this year.
It's gotta be.
If it doesn't, you're looking at trading him.
Yeah.
For scraps on the dollar.
Yes.
And
I wonder, because last year, how much of his preseason injury affected him that whole year. Because mm-hmm. later in the year, especially after a trade deadline, he started to heat up. You know, even in games where he wasn't scoring, he was looking good. And I wonder if it's similar with Kyle Poso. His injury just, or in Poso's case, being in the ICU, just affected him for so long. And even Hudson Fasching went through that as well. So I wonder if that was the case.
Yeah.
But if Nylander doesn't show any signs this year, you got to get rid of him. You can't have that here. You can't.
I agree.
It's unfortunate because I like him. I like him a lot. And he's just another one of those guys that would need a fresh start.
Yes. Again, it just makes me think, though, that yeah, you really need to start looking at some of these players and thinking, okay, when's the time that they're actually going to be able to step up?
Yeah.
And one of them for me is Alex Nylander. He absolutely needs to. He's the biggest name at this point.
Yes.
Bailey and Baptiste have been sent their message because Fasching, Bailey, Baptiste were among the prospect pool a couple of years ago that we were hyped about.
Yep.
I mean, Eichel had been drafted, and then that prospects game, first pick of the prospect, like for the prospects game, First pick was Eichel, and then the next, I think the other team got the next four picks because of it.
Yeah.
And it was McCabe fashioning Bailey Baptiste.
Yeah.
And poor Eichel's team didn't have a chance because Bailey, Fashing, and Baptiste went roughshod on everyone in that game as a line.
Right.
Eichel still did his thing, of course, but they were also trying to protect him and not get him hurt.
Yeah, obviously.
And then the next thing you know, you see Bailey, Baptiste, and Fashing going roughshod on the rest of that gold team, and I'm just like, wow, this is going to be amazing. This team's going to be everything that I hoped for and more.
Yeah.
Turned out I was wrong.
Yeah.
And so was everyone else.
Yeah. So my third line was Mittelstadt with Bailey and CJ Smith.
Okay.
And my fourth line, I put Gergensen's there.
Right.
With Pominville and Scott Wilson. And then my extra forwards are JT Brown and Johan Larsson.
JT Brown.
Like I said, I signed him as depth. I don't know if they're going to go that route, but I figure if they're trying to keep guys in Rochester, signing a guy like JT Brown would be similar to signing guys like...
That just sounds like a Jordan Nolan thing to me.
Well, he's not Jordan Nolan. Okay. He's nowhere near Jordan Nolan.
I know
JT Brown is at least a hockey player.
Okay. Because I think JT Brown and I think another guy who punches people in
the
face.
He doesn't punch people in the face.
And I know he does sometimes.
But he's not a known puncher.
He's not a repeated face puncher?
Yes.
I mean, Jordan Nolan wasn't necessarily a repeated face puncher, more than just fourth line plug.
Brown had 24 penalty minutes last season.
Okay, that's actually pretty clean.
He played 47 games.
That's actually pretty clean.
Yeah. Brown has always been one of those third or fourth line wingers who provides some kind of skating, some kind of energy.
Right.
Without it being like a puncher. He will throw his body and go to the net. But
he's a little smaller than I thought he was.
Yeah, he's a smaller player.
5'10", 169.
Yeah.
Interesting.
27 years old, too.
He's actually cleaned up his act with the penalty minutes this past year, at least.
Yeah.
But even then, his highest penalty total was 73 his last season in Tampa.
Yeah.
He actually had a 22-point season back in 15-16.
Yeah. I think he was primary. Yeah. So if they were to sign a guy for the fourth line / healthy scratch as an extra forward, I think JT Brown would be a guy who they would target.
Okay.
For that. Kind of similar to get to signing maybe Seth Griffith last season.
Right.
But he's a guy who would at least stick the whole year. And then defense, you obviously Dahlin, Ristolainen. I kept Scandella, McCabe, Gouley, Nelson, Bogosian as my seven.
Yes.
Beaulieu, odd man out. I think he's a guy who gets put on waivers. And going back when you were talking about Jake McCabe, who's a guy who might be the odd man out, if a guy like Lawrence Pilut makes the team, Jake McCabe might be a guy who would gets moved to make room for Pilut.
Right. I sense that there's, especially with the arrival of Hickey.
I don't think Hickey does much.
But I think that he, with the conversations of, you know, the likes of Will Borgen and Hickey and... You know, and the presence of Brendan Gouley, those are guys that could go back to Rochester.
Well, I think,
but if
they do sign Hickey, which I think they will,
They're not. They haven't traded Hudson Fashing for literally nothing.
Yeah,
Hickey
and Borgen
said it. Yeah. Paul Hamilton said, you know, there's designs to sign this guy because there really wouldn't be like you wouldn't have taken a trade like this if you didn't know you were going to have a chance to sign him.
Right. Okay. Right, right.
Like it's not a Jimmy VC situation necessarily more so than it is.
Yeah.
You know. You could tell he didn't want to sign in Arizona.
I think a guy like Hickey is going to be 100% Rochester.
I don't know about 100 like
I think it's 100 I think he 100%
Now, if he is 100% Rochester.
Cuz you could he will probably be one of your top four along with Will Borgen.
Yes, and I agree with that. It just turns into this conversation for me of there's a logjam at the top of the Rochester and the bottom of the Sabres defensive core.
Okay.
That you really kind of need to look into everything here. If they keep Victor Antipin around, I doubt it.
That's true, too. That's
they have his RFA rights.
And no, he has not signed in the KHL.
He has not, and Jason Botchel said as much. They have been in contact with him.
He does seem to want to stay in North America.
You've got Antipin, Pilut, Borgen.
Yep. Hickey.
Hickey, Casey Nelson.
That's five.
Those are guys at the logjam in that bottom Sabres top of Amherst. And I'm not even getting into Nathan Beaulieu.
And did you say Pilut?
I said Pilut.
Okay.
But then you still have, as your main six, Risto, Bogosian, Scandella, Beaulieu, McCabe, and Rasmus Dahlin.
Coming in, yep.
There's an extra body that needs to be shipped out on that defensive core.
Yes.
We don't know what it is yet. You suspect Beaulieu. I suspect it might be McCabe or Bogosian. It'd be tough to trade Bogosian.
Yes.
That $5.1 million cap hit over the next two seasons, kind of hard to move.
Unless they do end up buying out Bogosian, which I doubt. We'll see.
Botchel said he doesn't plan on any buyouts.
Yes.
And yes, sometimes you have to take what people say with a grain of salt, but he basically said to the point of, nah, don't expect Molson or Bogosian to be bought out. He said things could change. Natural statement to make, but at the same time, he said don't suspect it. And I'm going to take him for that.
Okay.
Not every general manager is as honest as Tim Murray was.
Yeah.
But then again, Tim Murray wasn't much of a general manager.
Yeah.
I think, though, that the Sabres, they're going to make some moves.
I think so.
And that's where I think, I know it's hard to predict them, but
it's just, I don't know how many, how much
they're
going to do.
You should have just grabbed a knife and took a stab.
That's, like, I don't know how much they're going
to
do.
I don't know how much they're going to do, but I think that there's two things that have to be done. One is to get yourself another player in the top six. Whether it's trading Ryan O'Reilly or not, you still need to do it. You have a surplus now on the defensive side that is not a total liability. You had players that were injured but have promise and value,
yes,
in particular with Jake McCabe.
Yes.
Now, that is the biggest thing there. I think you have a chance to take one of those defenders and move it for a top six. A second line winger. That's for what you're giving a top four defenseman in the likes of a Jake McCabe or, you know, Zach Bogosian, if you're going to take on a winger with a big contract hit.
Yeah.
It's a pretty easy thing you can look at. That's why I think something happens.
Okay.
Something has to still happen.
Yeah.
There is still one more thing that the Sabres absolutely need to do before their draft weekend is up. If they trade Ryan O'Reilly, and I'm really just getting the feeling it's happening, you obviously need to make sure you get something back in there. And there you can possibly look at a bigger trade from a defensive standpoint to get another player in your top six. That's where the talk of Jeff Skinner probably comes in.
Probably.
Who knows?
I don't know.
But I suspect that, like I said, my only criticism of you would be it's naive to think that there won't be anything.
That's why I didn't do anything because I'm just so unsure of it.
Right. And again, it's hard to predict it, I'm predicting that things are going to happen on draft weekend.
Okay.
Things are going to get busy. Things are going to get crazy. That's what happens on draft weekend. Someone always ends up making a deal, and I think this year the Sabres are going to be back at that.
Okay.
A couple years ago, they were already, that Eichel draft, they were back in the business of it.
Yep.
This year, I think they return to that. I don't think they need a shakeup. They really do.
Yeah.
It's just, what is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just getting that sinking feeling of Ryan O'Reilly's going to get traded.
Okay.
Is it the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? That's not necessarily for me to say.
Wait and see.
But I will say, I suspect something is going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So,
by the way, the other goalie I signed was Carter Hutton.
Right.
And I think that would be a great signing for the Sabres.
Carter Hutton might make himself a little more money than I suspect.
I don't know. It's
his numbers from this year.
He wouldn't be getting, he might not get more than $2 million.
Okay. All right.
That's what I would suspect. Okay.
All right. So,
but even still.
All right. The U.S. Open has been going on this weekend.
Yeah.
And, dude, if I went out there and started looking like a jackass on the golf course with how badly I golf, I don't know how much different it would look from the professionals doing it.
Well,
because I would look like I'm struggling. And guess what? They looked like they were struggling. I don't know how much different I would look than everyone else.
You would be struggling a lot worse.
I know, but I would still be struggling, and so were they.
Can you hit the ball like 100 yards?
Yes.
150?
I don't know. But you know what I do know?
What?
I would still look like crap. And so have a lot of them. And that's where my point is here. I'm not a huge golf fan, admittedly. But even I have recognized, man, this hasn't been a good weekend for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson made the cut on Friday. Little did we know that that would be only the next page to turn in something even bigger.
Oh, okay.
If you don't know, Mickelson was he's trying to convert on a putt for what I do believe was par.
I believe so.
And he misses this thing, a little to the right, but then it starts rolling. And
based on the way that
the way that course was going, that ball was going to disappear from the green.
Yeah.
So what does Mickelson do? Jogs over to it and hits it as it's rolling. I'm sorry, but I loved it.
It was awesome.
It was amazingly funny.
Yeah.
Super relatable.
Yeah.
Come on. Who does, other than angry, salty golf people, there is no more relatable thing than Phil Mickelson running up to a ball to prevent it from rolling 70 feet. I'm exaggerating, of course. But it would have been great if Mickelson had said about that instance that, you know, I only hit that thing so that I didn't have to make another 15 shots to get it back to the hole. that would have been great.
It's funny how he just was.
He took his penalty.
He took the two stroke.
He laughed.
It was a 2-stroke penalty. He ended up taking a 10 on that hole.
Yeah,
which was a par 4, so 6 over par. And then,
dude,
was just
would have taken more shots to make it back if that ball went rolling.
He was just like, you know what? I'll just take the penalty. Whatever, no big deal. I'm not winning this tournament anyway.
Yeah, he was not even close to the picture. Look, Joe Buck and whoever the other guy that was commenting the whole time with him. I think it was like Phil Zange or something like that. I don't know the name.
Paul Azinger?
Yeah, that guy, sure.
I mean, he was a great golfer in
his
time.
Sure, that jackass.
Well, he was a great golfer in his time.
He's sounding like a dope. Okay? Look, you spent way too much time on that yesterday. Way too much time on it. Making a mountain out of a freaking molehill.
Yeah.
Look, I do not golf. But holy crap. Phil Mickelson there, frustrated, having a bad day on the job. Who hasn't had a bad day on the job? I know I have.
Yeah.
And I've seen other people see how bad I've been doing on the job that day. How frustrated I look. How rattled I could be. And I just talk. For the most part. Or I push buttons. Or I answer callers. And that's my job. I don't have anyone following me. I don't have cameras on me. I'm not a national darling. Like the Hefty Lefty. Or is he just Lefty? Hefty Lefty was Jared Lorenzen. My bad. But come on. He was having a bad day. He had a bad weekend. He like everyone else, has been terrible. Tiger, Rory, Spieth, Day, all missed the cut.
Yeah.
Every time I was watching, I was just watching potential disaster with every swing of a club.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter who it was. We saw Poulter, who was drawing within Dustin Johnson in the second round, collapse on the last two holes. End up back over par. One person was under par for the first two rounds. Oh, and by the way, he got victimized on the third day.
Yeah. DJ got messed up.
And hey, so you want to go ahead and tell me that Phil disgraced the game after seeing everyone getting just blasted by this golf course? I've seen many golf courses that look tougher than this thing. Or no, that look softer than this thing.
It just shows that every sport has their dinosaurs who say, who when one thing doesn't to their eye doesn't go right, it's a disgrace.
But to say that he disgraced the game, dude,
like
this is about
that's the thing.
This is an attempt at overblowing something to the point of Deflategate. You want to know why?
God.
Deflategate was a game where the Patriots dropped 40 and they didn't even throw the ball that much. LeGarrette Blount was just running over Colts players like it was no tomorrow. Oh, and they were intercepting Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
So guess what? It didn't matter. Guess what? Mickelson was at a 10 over par. It doesn't matter. Shut the hell up. Because your dinosaur need to think that the dinosaur way is how you dinosaur everything in life. It's not how it goes anymore.
Phil knew.
He was chuckling.
But no.
Well, he was laughing the whole time.
He laughed. His playing partner, Andrew Johnson, was just like, what did I just see? And even he didn't care.
Yeah.
He even said on Twitter, like, I was shocked by it. I told him, I was like, damn, I did not expect you to do that. But at the same time, he was laughing too. He thought it was hilarious.
Because he knew, like Phil, that ball was going to roll away 20 feet.
Not only did he know that was going to happen, he also knew that they were not in contention to win the tournament. And he also knew that this course has been playing like crap.
Yeah. You know what?
Because guess what?
You want to blame someone for Phil Mickelson doing that? I mean, yeah, Phil did it. He had the option and choice and did it. And I think it was the right call.
Yeah.
But you know what else kind of helps? Having a little more grass on your course so that everything stops rolling.
Ian Poulter, who was in contention heading into the weekend,
yep,
ended up shooting a 76 on Saturday, which was 6 over, and a 75 today. Was complaining about the conditions of the course.
Which, by the way, it was kind of easy to see.
Which was very easy to see. I don't blame him one bit. And I get it. Poulter's British. He's not from here. He's not from... I don't care. That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And golf is golf.
Golf is golf. Listen.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. Not true, by the way.
Not the players of today.
But guess what? Again, I could have gone out there and looked like half of those guys because
it's true.
It was that bad for them.
Yeah.
I would have just brought a putter the whole time and putt my way there, and I still could have ended up with a 10 on a hole just like Phil Mickelson.
Yeah. I'm gonna go on Twitter real quick. Go to Poulter's Twitter and see if I can find it. Let's find some of his tweets.
So again, okay. Dinosaurs.
Okay, so here, I got him. So, Mike Davis, I believe, is the president of the USGA, the United States Golf Association, who runs the U.S. Open every year. Like, you know, the Augusta National runs the Masters every year. USGA runs the U.S. Open. The RNC run the Open Championship, the British Open. And the PGA runs the PGA Championship every year. Mike Davis, I believe, is the president of the USGA. He had a couple quotes from him. There were some aspects today where well-executed shots were not rewarded. We missed it with the wind. We don't want that. The firmness was okay, but it was too much with the wind we had. It probably was too tough this afternoon. A tale of two courses. Because the morning group had a much better time managing the course than the afternoon group because the grass dried so much, so the ball was rolling more, and there was a lot of wind. So you can hit a great shot, and then the ball rolls somewhere else where it's not supposed to because of the wind and because of the lack of grass on the greens.
And guess what?
And Poulter was a guy who was a victim of that. He tweeted, "I'm not sure I could possibly comment without using words which shouldn't be seen. Just like some of those pins. Disappointing." Why are mistakes still being made at this level? Was that fun to watch? I'm only four behind, but I can still win. And that was after his Saturday rounds.
Yeah.
Another quote from Davis. It got too tough today in some areas. If we got a mulligan, we would have slowed the greens down this afternoon. I.e., they would have watered the greens more.
Dude.
Confident. We can slow down the golf course going into tomorrow. Not what you usually hear heading into the final round at the U.S. Open. Yeah, that means you did. That means your greenskeepers did a bad job of keeping that course fresh.
And you want to know something? Tommy Fleetwood is in second after a historic day.
Yeah, he shot 63 today. One shot off the U.S. Open record.
You want to know what he was before that? +9.
Yeah.
That tells you how disastrous this weekend has been for everyone. That someone needed a historic run
just to get into contention,
just to almost have a chance to win this thing. All Brooks Koepka has to do is not derp his way through it.
Yeah,
he's 2 under right now.
He's 2 under right now. Yeah, Koepka right now at 1 over. Fleetwood's at 2 over. Patrick Reed's at 3 over. Dustin Johnson, Daniel Berger, Tony Finau are all 4 over. So you got pretty much that's 6 players right there, 3 shots away from each other. Interesting enough, too, Brooks Koepka was last year's U.S. Open champ.
Yeah.
So he's looking at back-to-back U.S. Opens.
But again, the fact that it was so bad through 3 rounds that you needed a historic run for someone to actually have a chance.
Yeah.
And you want to go ahead and yell at Phil Mickelson? Get off your high horse.
Poulter,
as you ride off into the
Poulter
sun.
Also said in terms of the... The last Davis quote I said got too tough today in some areas. It got mulligan, would have slowed down the greens more. He was like, is that an apology? Grow a pair. Say we effed up. You don't get a mulligan at this level. How can this team do that without consequences?
Yes. And look, again, the Phil Mickelson thing. Phil Mickelson was frustrated, just like how he and Poulter was.
Yeah.
He did it in a different way, except his looked a little more fun to me. He took his penalty, he laughed it off, and there it was. Because he had that infectious smile on his face. But, oh no! How dare you! I cannot believe he actually did this as you ride your horse off into the sunset. You're on a high horse. Get off of it! I just bruised my shin doing that demonstration, by the way.
Twitter can be such a...
And that wasn't Twitter. It was Joe Buck.
No. I know. Air. But what I'm saying...
It was some jackass writing for the Golf Channel.
But
shut up.
But here's the thing. It's the fact... I'm saying Twitter is such an interesting place, and it's free, by the way, because... You're going to get those debates of people who agree with Joe Buck, who say that is a 100% a disgrace, and people would be like, who the hell cares? He was taking advantage of a rule, and he's not even in contention, so who the hell cares? It's funny. Why can't you just accept humor?
Ready?
And then you got people who are telling Ian Poulter after tweeting those stuff, so just don't play the tournament then. If you don't like it, why are you here? Then don't play. Things like that.
Ready?
Golfer, here's a tweet. Golfers complaining about a course that every single golfer on the field is playing is the most ridiculous thing in sports. Poulter is probably one of other golfers who have tweeted out about it. But many more golfers, I'll bet you, have complained about it. It just doesn't get heard.
No, Dustin Johnson actually had said after leading through 2 rounds that it was a rough course.
Yeah.
It was a rough first 2 rounds.
Yeah.
For everyone. You want to know the greatest thing about this? Again, you ready? Here's the story I'm talking about here. Randall Mell, writing for the Golf Channel, saying that he broke the spirit of the game.
You're an idiot.
I just... You've got to be kidding me. It's ridiculous. No, like he brazenly ran out to putt his moving ball.
And that's just and so it's like it's also like who doesn't do that? You generally like frustrated golfers will do that. You know, when you're just playing for fun. Like you're frustrated. They'll do that.
Mickelson had said something.
You know who else hit the ball while it's still moving? If you're on a mini golf course or you're having fun with your friends, you'll do that.
Yeah. You know, well, like look.
Does that ruin the spirit of golf?
No.
Exactly. And so Phil doing it doesn't do it either.
Ready? Now here's the best part. Mickelson had said this. You know, I know the rules. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to do that. I just finally did.
Nice.
You know what that is? That's just, you know what? I know I'm out of it. To hell with it. Let's just have fun finishing out this weekend because I'm doing so badly that I don't matter today.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow.
Yeah.
So guess what? It's okay. Let it go. The follow-up, by the way, to that quote is this that was written. There's knowing the rules, and then there's manipulating the rules.
Oh, my God.
Dude was going to get a 10 anyway. What's the point?
Yeah.
There's black and white rules, and there's the spirit of the game. Get off your high horse. So then maybe you can actually relate to something that everyone probably wants to do when they go golfing. Frank, you golf?
Yeah, I do a lot.
How many times do you end up sucking so bad that you just want to take something back?
Enough. Too many.
How relatable is that moment for you?
Very. Very.
I can't tell you how many times I play hockey that I miss a shot or something like that. And guess, dude, the amount of times that I will willingly do something illegal. I'm not ashamed because I'm doing bad. So guess what? I'll hold your stick, dude. Get off of me. You're faster than me. You caught up to me. I suck. So I'm going to hold your stick so you don't bother me while I still have the puck for 2 more seconds. When Phil Mickelson did that, it was just so relatable to me.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought, you know what? Who cares? He's doing so badly. I feel bad for the dude. And then I was kind of hoping that he would make it after that, too.
Oh, my God. If he made it, that would have been awesome.
That would have been hilariously great. On the move, hitting it.
I think he would have gotten like an. I mean, he would have only gotten like a 7 or an 8, but even still,
he would have taken the penalty.
That would have even better to see.
You still would have had to take the penalty.
Well, that's after the. I think that would have been after.
Oh, okay. But still, he knows what he
because
did.
Well because if you he knows if what you don't because if you don't account the 2-stroke penalty, then he would have got that would have been an 8.
He knows what he did, and he even said, "I've always wanted to do that." Which means he knew he was out of it so badly.
He's so relatable with the casual golfers.
Yeah. He knew that he could only do such an offense that he had to be that far out of it in order to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it was frustration. Maybe it was something else.
I think
maybe
it was
just
frustration.
He didn't feel like hitting 4 more times to try to get it back to the hole. When he knew, well, my weekend's shot.
There was definitely frustration. Definitely.
Of course there was.
But it's just like,
but
who cares?
But it's ruined the spirit of the game.
Oh, well.
And everything that Joe Buck and his broadcast partner said as well. I just
don't like Joe Buck in general.
Get off your high horse.
And then people who are telling, you know, just golfers, to golfers who complain about course conditions to, well, just don't play then, or quit complaining about it because.
You know what my response to those guys is? Quit complaining when you shoot 5 over at bobolinks.
My response is, you ever have that day at work where you just can't do anything right?
I should have texted Brian to see if Koziel had some thoughts on this.
I'm sure he does.
I would have loved to talk to Brian and pick his brain on this.
Definitely have to. That's a future podcast. That's a future podcast.
I'm sure we'll hear about this on the next Tee to Green. By the way, that's next Saturday on WGR, 7 to 8 a.m. I got you, Bri.
Yeah.
As the man that produces your show, I've got you. I've always got you.
Always. No, my response is, you ever have that day at work or a whole week at work where nothing goes right? You try to do something, something good at work, and nothing happens as a result, and all you are is just frustrated the whole week. That's how these players are. They're just frustrated.
They're human.
They're human.
Just because they get paid money to do an athletic activity doesn't mean that they are not human beings.
Yeah.
And it happens. And yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
And again, super relatable.
Mm-hmm. That's why dinosaurs need to get out.
I get it.
Yeah.
So
I saw a couple responses of those kinds of people who were applying to Ian Poulter. One of them was a picture of soldiers going into battle in World War II, saying, these guys don't complain. Why are you're complaining about a golf course? These guys are fighting for their lives.
Look,
like they're not the same thing.
People that do that, by the way, they're trying to compare an apple to an orange.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't even say that. Actually, that's not a good enough comparison.
They're trying to compare an apple to a rock.
Yeah, and saying both of these things are edible.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's basically it. You took what I was going to use as the reference, because I looked outside and I'm like, you know what? Rocks.
Yeah.
Or cement. That's a great idea. Because all I see is blacktop right now. And just like, I was like, you know what? Just get a piece of concrete. There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Apple and rock. Yeah. Yes. And both things are edible.
They are very edible.
Oh, yes. Have you had a nice, tasty rock before? They're delicious.
Yeah.
Good for the bones.
Ah.
They make sure your teeth are hard. Otherwise, you go to a dentist.
They filter out the strong ones and the weak ones.
My dog used to chew rocks.
Did he really?
He had to stop.
I wonder.
We made him stop.
I wonder.
But he had the most powerful jaws, period, right now. Yeah, his jaws are still stupid-ass strong, point-blank, period.
He had the most powerful jaws around the block.
He's got the most powerful jaws. You want to know why? Because he chewed rocks.
I did not know that.
We just talked about my dog chewing rocks.
That's hilarious.
That's how far of a tangent we went off
on. Oh, my God. I love your dog, too.
Dinosaurs.
Get out.
Just stop.
Yeah.
Look, and this isn't just dinosaurs. It's just what we were talking about last week with Louie, Hall of Fame voters, and how they're salty sports writers sometimes. This is the same damn thing all over again, reinforcing my point.
Yeah.
Breathe some oxygen. Go out and smell some flowers or something. Go on a tandem bicycle ride. Watch some posters or something. I don't know. Go enjoy your life, damn it. Because people shouldn't have to be this bitter. And I may sound bitter right now complaining about people that are complaining, but it's more or less the fact that not everything has to be seen as a cynical way. And yes, it's fun to be cynical. It is. The snark is always fantastic. But there's a difference between snark and just being bitter. And that's what I see. And that's what I like to call out. Because bitter, salty sports writers, I need their takes in order to sprinkle it onto some fries. Or maybe even some rocks, apparently.
Yeah.
Give it a little flavor.
Yeah. And a little hardness, too. I think we're done.
I think we're done here.
I think we're done.
I think we're done here. We sprinkled some salt on some rocks.
Koepka's still in the lead.
Just
still at one over, two under the day.
All
right. Right now, he's on the 16th hole.
Are you ready for a shameless plug?
What's that?
All right, here we go. We're getting closer to the 11-day power play. And
yeah. Yeah,
I am among the likes that are playing.
That's a little more than WGR. That's a little more than 3 weeks from now.
It's more than just about three weeks from now for our shift, and actually, it's almost a month to our shift.
Yeah,
we play on the 12th of July.
Yep.
So, if you have a chance to volunteer, you can head to 11daypowerplay.com. And go check it out. They still need locker room attendance. They need officials. So if you want to call me offsides for skating poorly. Go ahead.
I hope somebody volunteers as an official just for your game.
I'm not that big a deal, but you know who is? Bulldog. He's big.
Just for the GR. Big deal. Just for the GR shift, and somebody just calls a penalty on you just for no reason.
Why me though?
Because,
like I said, I'm not a big deal.
Just because.
But you've got the likes of me, Joe DiBiase, Bulldog, Jeremy White, TJ Luckman, Mike Jafari, then producer Ryan Gates.
Yeah, Ryan's still going to be a part of it as well.
OHL draftee Owen Parker.
Yeah.
Yep. Bulldog's giant goalie son will be part of our gang.
Brayton Wilson.
I forgot Brayton. I'm sorry, Brayton. And a couple of other guys. Oh, and our boss, program director, yes. Alan Davis.
Yes.
So you may recognize him in a commercial standing on a window.
Isn't there...
Sorry, Alan.
So I think Brian Mazurowski from WBEN is
part of the team.
Yep.
We got people.
I will not be a part of the team, but I have been attending the practices.
Frank's been our backup goalie called up from the minors.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Frank will definitely have a role probably on the bench somehow for the shift on that July 12th. That's a Thursday. But not just that. We need donations still. We need volunteers for this. It's a big deal. It's, you know, it's for donations, for cancer research, for programs that help out with the life-threatening illness. Camp Good Days, Make-A-Wish Western New York, and, of course, Roswell Park. It is out there for a big cause. Because everyone knows someone that's been affected by it, and why not help out?
Yeah.
I'm doing it in the silliest of ways. I'm playing hockey for 4 straight hours. But you fight in a way that you want to, it makes it even more fun. It makes it better knowing that you're trying to make a difference. So if you want to help out, by all means, go to 11daypowerplay.com, and we'll try to get, I keep saying we try to get people going in these. We got to get Brayton Wilson in for Wednesday.
Yes.
Because the NHL draft is that Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
Excuse me.
Yes. Yes. Yes, guys. Darlene's almost a saver. It's almost here.
So we're gonna have Brayton Wilson probably for Wednesday's podcast. If I can get Chris Baker here. The man is running around with his head cut off. It's NHL draft season. The man is a busy dude. I have to follow up with him.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be speculation of trades. There's going to be everything else, but we do know one thing and one thing for sure. This weekend. This coming weekend. Rasmus Dahlin will be a Buffalo Sabre. And if that doesn't get your jollies up in a jolly, I don't know what I'm saying anymore, then I don't know what will. You might be a salty sports writer talking about how Phil Mickelson's a jackass and that he broke the spirit of the game. Because if you can't get happy about Rasmus Dahlin being a Buffalo Sabre, you're that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening, as always, to the Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer.
I'm Frank O'Curry.
And we always do that thing on Wednesdays and Sundays here on WGR550.com. Thank you for always listening, as always, for listening. And thank you for listening and hanging out with not just us, but anyone else. Sports Talk Saturday, Sports Talk Sunday. Howard Jeremy, Shopin Bulldog, One Bills Live, The Instigators, they're going to have a marathon 5-hour show on Friday.
That's going to be fun.
That is, oh boy, the boys are going to be talking for 5 hours, and I can't wait to hear some good stories there from them.
Oh God, yeah.
All right, but thank you as always for listening, and as they always say, don't break the spirit of the game.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world. there was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.